Hey, Leading Learning listener, if you represent a membership organization looking for ways to expand your online course catalog rapidly with high-quality content, we have good news.
At leadinglearning.com/AMA, you can find out how to make online training from the American Management Association available to your learners.
Through a partnership between AMA and Tagoras, the parent company of Leading Learning, you can give your learners access to more than 70 e-learning modules covering essential business topics ranging from leading and innovating to managing projects effectively to working in hybrid teams.
For details on how to grow your catalog with courses from a true global leader in management training, visit leadinglearning.com/AMA.
If you're a leader or an aspiring leader in the business of lifelong learning, you're in the right place. I'm Salisa Steele.
And I'm Jeff Cobb, and this is the Leading Learning Podcast.
So, this is episode 6 of the Leading Learning Podcast, and we wanted to address the question of how it's been going. So, Jeff, how's it been going?
Well, you know, I think we definitely need to review and reflect. That's what learning is all about. And, I think it's been going pretty darn good. We've had some really interesting interviews so far. We set out as one of the things that we definitely wanted to do with the podcast was talk to CEOs, executive director, president type people from some trade and professional associations and get their perspective on learning and the value it plays with their organizations, because we feel like we just haven't seen enough or heard enough conversation at the top of organizations about learning, about education, and how that really factors into where associations are going and the role that they're playing. So we've gotten some great input from Rick Grimm at NIGP, from Cheryl Ronk at MSAE, and I know we've got some other ones coming up. So I think, you know, in terms of talking to leaders here on the Leading Learning Podcast, that's been excellent so far.
Yeah, and we've also been talking to some folks who are coming to the Leading Learning Symposium. We've been talking to some of the faculty, and we've also been talking to Rohit Bhargava, who's going to be our featured outside speaker, kind of bringing that perspective that's not necessarily of the association world, but incredibly applicable and useful to the association world.
So talking data, talking innovations, talking trends, the type of things that, you know, you got to be digging into if you are trying to lead learning in your particular part of the world. And we've got more coming. We haven't published Rohit yet. We're going to get him up soon. We've got Andy Steggles, who's at Higher Logic and, you know, came from the association world and the world of online community and is now, you know, out there with a platform that does that, but just knows so much about, you know, social learning and how you make learning happen in those sort of informal settings.
We're also going to have Lisa Bing, who's on the faculty, so she'll be joining the podcast we already have with Wes Stroklo and Seth Kahn, the other faculty members. So, you know, it's really, as Jeff was saying, you know, we have these people are experts, and they're going to be bringing their expertise to the symposium. They're going to be sharing it in the podcast, and it's really useful. And I know we have an interview with an attendee coming up as well.
That's right. Josh Goldman, who's going to be at the symposium and is one of those people who I always look to, you know, as a pace setter out there in the world of learning and professional development. He is the actually the vice president of learning at the Ohio CPAs and is kind of, you know, making waves there. So great to talk with Josh. Maybe we should pause, though, because this time around, we're not actually doing an interview. And that's fine, because that's part of our master plan.
That's right. We do have a master plan. And so the idea is to intersperse our interviews with the occasional episode, roughly every fourth or fifth episode, where it will just be me talking to you, Jeff.
That's right. And hopefully we've heard enough interesting things in the meantime, or done enough interesting things in the meantime to be interesting ourselves after we've talked to so many interesting people. But we think it's good every once in a while for us to come together, put our heads together, have a conversation, and hopefully offer up something of value to the listening audience. So what are we going to offer of value today?
Well, you know, we've been thinking about, we were writing an article and thinking about the idea of, okay, you know, what can you be doing to really grow your education business? And we've come up with three areas where we think, you know, a little investment can go a really long way.
and definitely not the only three areas when it comes to growing an education business. But these are ones that we keep coming back to again and again. And like you said, you know, they don't necessarily cost money. I mean, you can certainly invest money in them, but you can get a lot of mileage with some relatively small changes in all of these areas. So why don't we just dive right into those and start talking about those investment areas for listeners.
So the three investment areas we're going to talk about are these. The first one is to demonstrate value. The second one is social proof. And then the third one is helping learners to help themselves. So let's unpack each of those a little bit more and what they mean. So Jeff, you want to take demonstration of value and explain what we mean by that and how folks can increase how they're presenting their value?
I will gladly tackle that one. That's been dear to our hearts for quite a while now. We have a concept actually called the value ramp that really kind of lays this out. And it's the idea that, you know, things are so much more competitive out there right now, and not just with, you know, actual competitors, other people who are other organizations that might be selling educational content or giving it away for free. You know, certainly those competitors are out there, but just the general competition for people's attention in general. I mean, they've got plenty of alternatives when it comes to knowledge and learning, but they also just have so much else going on in their lives. And so if you expect to claim a chunk of time from them, a chunk of their attention for them to participate in whatever you're offering educationally, you better make it real clear up front that you have something of value to offer. And when we talk about the value ramp, we talk about kind of a lower portion of the value ramp where you are providing free content or very low cost content that's very practically oriented, gives, you know, very useful, helpful information, and starts to build some momentum for people to then go up the ramp to the things that you're actually charging for and providing much higher value for. And those items that you might use to build value, I mean, they include things that a lot of organizations already have in spades. I mean, they might be white papers, they might be articles, they might be blog posts, they might be videos that are captured at conferences. All of that content that organizations, you know, often have locked up, just using it in a much more conscious and intentional way to get it out there in front of your prospective audience so that you can attract them into your educational opportunities.
Well, and you just use that phrase, locked up, and I think that's one point we want to make sure that folks get, is that you have to make sure that the evidence of the value is easily accessible, and that means it can't be behind the member login. You need to make sure that you're demonstrating value before anybody has to supply credentials, or certainly before they have to sign up and join your organization.
Yeah, that's absolutely key. I mean, a lot of times, you know, even if you do get past the login, things aren't necessarily well organized and you can't necessarily find them as well as you'd like to be able to. But ideally, those initial demonstrations of value, you do want outside of the login. You want it to be very easily accessible. And in fact, you know, there are really three keys to demonstrating value effectively. The first is that accessibility. You know, the evidence of value has to be easily accessible, as you were just saying. And then beyond that, you got to make sure that whatever that evidence is, whether it's the blog post, the video, the audio file, whatever it is, it needs to be useful. You know, a lot of times organizations will put things out there that just, you know, highlight a problem or an opportunity, but you need to go beyond that. You got to provide, you know, practical tips and how-tos that really make it clear that you know how to address the problem or opportunity. So, you know, make it easily accessible, make it highly useful. And then the third thing is,
you got to tie it to the education that you're offering. So you got to make it clear that, you know, yeah, if you highlight this problem and you offer a tip, then you can say, you know, for more in-depth on how to address this issue, we have a webinar coming up next month. We have a conference where we're going to be featuring that as a track. Whatever it is, you want to make sure that it's very clear that you do really know how to help with this problem, that you are offering even further value.
And that sounds, you know, so obvious, but again and again, we just see this isn't happening when we go in and work with organizations. You know, the evidence of value is not readily accessible to the extent that it's there. It's maybe not as useful as it could be, and it doesn't take a lot oftentimes to make it much more useful. And then making that clear link between the value you're offering and the education that you offer. So, you know, all of these are relatively obvious, but you have to be intentional. You have to be conscious about doing it. And so you know, we wanted to offer a challenge to make this real within, you know, the organizations of listeners here. So just as a very simple challenge, you know, do this yourself, or better yet, get the right people in the room, you know, have a projector, throw it up on the screen, but review the section of your website that's dedicated to education and ask, you know, how much proof of value is there in that part of the website, really, and how easily accessible is it? Do they have to log in, or can they, you know, get to it without being logged in? And if you find you need to do more to demonstrate value, then, you know, brainstorm right there what those, you know, potential pieces of evidence are that you have, or if necessary, you know, call another meeting and brainstorm about that. But create an inventory of the content that you have readily available and that you could be using to demonstrate value. And again, you know, for us, this is that lower part of the value ramp, and we'll include a link to the value ramp in the show notes to this episode, because that's just a very useful tool in thinking about your value overall and thinking about how you're demonstrating value out to your potential audience for educational products and services. So that's number one. That's the first tip for investing in your education and learning offerings.
And so the second area of investment that we want to suggest is social proof. And social proof is a term that got popularized in the book Influence, The Psychology of Persuasion. And basically what social proof argues is that we look to others to confirm what is correct or acceptable. And this tends to be used a lot in sales and marketing. And one of the most obvious ways is just with customer testimonials. So you'll have that, you know, Joe or Sally telling you, oh, this is great. It delivered exactly what I need. So, you know, someone speaking to the value of a product or service. Now, you know, associations are, you know, by their very nature, social organizations. They're a collection of people who have a lot in common. So it seems that it would be obvious to make good use of testimonials. But has that been true in our experience, Jeff?
You know, it's amazing. If there's one thing we can usually predict in going in to work with any new client, it's that we're going to have to talk about social proof at some point, because you go and you look at whatever serves as the catalog. I mean, it may be an actual print catalog. It may be more often it's going to be a PDF or just pages on the website these days. But you go and look at those pages and you see, you know, very few, if any, testimonials. To the extent that they're there at all, they tend to be really generic. They often don't have names and pictures and titles associated with them. They often don't really speak to the actual value of the education. They're just more of the sort of a smile sheet. I really enjoyed myself, or, you know, my employer really appreciated this sort of comment, which is great, but that doesn't really tell somebody, you know, why was this valuable to this person who is my peer and who, you know, I feel I can trust. So, you know, more of it and basically doing it better, having a better process around getting the right types of testimonials is essential.
Right. Being consistent about it, continually asking for it, and, you know, you don't have to rely on evaluation forms. I mean, you don't have to wait for the testimonials to sort of happen naturally. You shouldn't be afraid to go out and talk to some of your, you know, power learners and say, hey, you know, you keep coming back, you know, for more. You know, what value are you getting out of it? Have that conversation with the person, and then help them kind of craft a little statement that's going to really speak to your value points, and then put that up there either as a video. That's ideal. But if not, like you're saying, Jeff, at least with a photo, at least with a title and an organization, anything that really helps people believe that this isn't, you know, I play a doctor on TV kind of person, providing information.
And organizations are often reluctant to do this, but, you know, there's a flip side of this coin. When you're going out and proactively seeking the testimonials, you're proactively going out and talking to your members, you know, about their needs and what they appreciated and what they enjoyed, and they appreciate that. Now, people like to be asked, you know, how it was, and if it was in fact good, they're going to be happy to say so. And if it wasn't good, well, maybe that's not the person you get the testimonial from, but you're going to get some great input. That's just, you know, a great way to be in contact with your audience. So really making a social proof initiative part of your culture, I think, is something that organizations should be looking at doing.
Right. And like you're saying, don't be afraid of what you're going to hear, because even if it doesn't translate to a testimonial, it's still useful information. So the challenge for this investment in social proof is to review your catalog or whatever your equivalent of that is. Like Jeff was saying, maybe it's a PDF, maybe it's some pages on your websites. Also look at some of your recent communications, so maybe email blasts about your major educational offerings, and look at them. Do they include testimonials? Do the testimonials, you know, include photos and names and organizations? Do they really speak to the value that your products are delivering? And if not, then, you know, this is your chance to launch a social proof initiative and to really go out and focus on gathering some really high quality testimonials.
So that's number one. And number two, we've got, you know, demonstrating value, and then we've got social proof. And those are, you know, obviously tied together. People who are giving social proof are also helping to demonstrate the value. They're articulating the value that they have received in what you're offering. And then the third one, and you know, this is one that's really been dear to my heart for years now, and I know is to you as well, Scalise, and that's helping learners to help themselves. And it's just simply recognizing, you know, that when it comes right down to it, most of the value that comes out of a learning experience is going to depend on what the learner has been willing and able to put into it. So learners who know how to learn better, they're going to get more value out of your offerings. That's just a fact. So anything you can do to cultivate more effective learning among your audience, it's going to be to your benefit in the end to do that, to your great benefit to be able to do that.
And so to help you help your learners, what can you do? Well, we have three ideas for you. One is to teach your learners about learning. And the point here is that, yeah, we almost all of us went up through some sort of educational system, but often that was not, the teachers weren't necessarily mirroring for us the most effective teaching approaches. And so we know a lot more now about brain science and how we learn and all of that. So it's really making sure that the learners understand that they know that they need to be doing things, like they need to be willing to engage, and they can't just expect to kind of have it all spoon-fed, that they're going to have to be actively engaged in trying to solve the problems and trying to learn the content. So, you know, you can do things with pre-materials, or, you know, if it's a place-based event, you can have an opening session where you really talk about effective learning practices, and then make sure that the learners are hearing that. So that's kind of priming the pump then for whatever content you're going to work through with them in that educational experience.
And we are, in fact, doing this. I mean, we do walk the walk on these types of things that we, you know, talk about on the podcast. As part of the Leading Learning Symposium, we've been putting pre-content out there. We have what we call emphatically recommended readings that go along with the symposium. And we call them recommended because, you know, these are adult learners. We know we can't require them to read things before the event, but to at least suggest things that if we can get, you know, many, if not most of the people coming to have read, that gives some common points of reference. It gets them engaged before the event. And it also, to be honest, it put us in a dialogue with the people who are coming to the event. I mean, some people are saying, hey, you know, I'm not sure if I can handle this or not, you know, which I'm sure is going through the minds of a lot of people listening and say, I can't give pre-materials to my people. They'll say there's no way, you know, that I'm able to handle that type of thing. But even being able to have that dialogue with people, I think helps to start raise the bar a little bit around the kind of learning that you're trying to promote, the kind of culture that you're trying to promote. And I think that's a very important point to try to create this sort of new culture of learning among the audience that you're serving.
Well, and related to that is our second point here, which is that you don't need to pander to people. I mean, we can't present the best possible learning experience if our goal is to never stretch our learners, to never inconvenience them. You know, this idea of the emphatically recommended readings, we realize, you know, a lot of people are very busy. They have other things going on. So to ask them to do that reading in advance, sure, that may cause them a little bit of discomfort. You may get some people who will be like, I can't do that. But the fact is that we're making it clear up front that we really do recommend these, and we really think that that's going to help them get the most out of the symposium. So when you phrase it that way, where, again, your goal is to help them learn as much as possible, I think people begin to understand, okay, right, I can't just sit back and learn. I have to be actively engaged. It's a two-way street. The facilitator or teacher needs to do her part, I need to do my part as the learner.
Yeah, I mean, you don't just show up and sit there for 2 days like you're a bucket and get filled up with knowledge, you know, unless you're engaging, you know, the learning is just not going to happen. And just being upfront with people about that. I mean, we're all adults. And, you know, let's face it, I think in many instances, organizations are afraid of the dreaded bad evaluation you know, that they might get on the form that comes back. And, you know, we got to drop that. The smile sheet stuff is just not really an effective way to measure actual learning that's happening. You know, being adults who are serving adults and who are engaged in discussion around learning, that's the effective way to actually create a better culture of learning. And as you said, to not pander to people and to set that high standard.
And so our third tip around helping learners to learn is to maybe go with the less is more kind of approach, that often learners can be really overwhelmed with choices. And if you think about a lot of annual conferences, you know, it's a big menu of often pretty disconnected choices. And so it actually takes a lot of time and effort if you're really going to go through all those sessions and figure out which ones to go to. And if you just even look at the average course catalog, so not necessarily the big conferences, again, it's just there are a lot and lot of choices. And so one thing to consider is that maybe fewer, better designed, more tightly integrated options, that might actually be better for the learners.
Yeah, really, it just comes down to, you know, not trying to be all things to all people, which is, you know, one of those perennial association problems. Doesn't apply just to what you're doing with education, but it definitely does apply within education. And I think, you know, fewer choices, higher quality is often just a much better way to go if you really want to help your learners to make good choices and get the best value from you.
And so the challenge around this point is to do a quick review of your major educational events, your major educational offerings, and look, you know, are you providing any introductory materials that really help to set the stage for effective learning? And if not, think about creating some of those materials. And I know we both are big fans of a book called Make It Stick, The Science of Effective Learning, that really just summarizes a lot of what we've learned about how people learn and gives you some great techniques for how you might techniques you might highlight for learners so that they're aware of them.
Yeah, that's a great book. It's a very easy read. It's actually one of our emphatically recommended readings for the Leading Learning Symposium. And in the show notes, we'll include a link to a brief video we did around that and just some other information about that book, because I think that is just kind of a go-to resource for being able to think through how learning happens and how you can support your learners in being as effective as possible.
So this wraps up episode 6 of the Leading Learning Podcast. And to get show notes, go to leadinglearning.com/episode6. That's the word episode, the number 6. And while you're there, you'll see some options for subscribing to the podcast. And if you're getting value out of the podcast, we would be very grateful if you would subscribe.
Please do subscribe. We've actually had, you know, we've been pretty successful with the downloads on this so far. We're getting some subscribers, but you know, it's motivation, it's inspiration to us if we can see that people are actually, whether it's on iTunes, whether it's on Stitcher Radio, or however it is that you choose to do it. We would also be really grateful if you take just a minute to give us a rating on iTunes. That's also extremely helpful. It lets you know the gods of Apple, I guess, you know that this is something worth listening to, and helps people to find the podcast if they're searching for it in iTunes, which is where most people are probably going to be looking for a podcast. You can do that by going to leadinglearning.com/iTunes, and it'll take you directly to the iTunes interface and make it easy for you to get in there and just give a quick rating and review. And don't assume that other people are going to do that. We hope they will, but you are the person who needs to go to leadinglearning.com/iTunes and do that quick rating or review.
That's right. We need your social proof. And related to that, we would appreciate it if you would tell others about the podcast. So you can do that, you know, via Twitter, via LinkedIn, via Facebook, whatever your preferred means of that. If you go to leadinglearning.com/share, you can get a tweet pre-populated that you can send as is or edit. And we really help We really appreciate your help in spreading the word about the podcast.
So if you are a new listener, thank you for listening the first time. If you are a returning listener, thank you for coming back more than one time to keep listening to the Leading Learning Podcast. And until the next time, we are signing off.